Do you guys like Three Men and a Baby?
Why limit myself?
It's 2 o'clock.
Let's what start. Are we doing at 2 o'clock?
Same thing we do every week, Brain.
Hello, and welcome to Skeptically Yours, where thinking is free. Today's episode brought to you by The Big Bang.
Boom.
Sitting next to me is my co-host and producer, Heather Henderson.
Hi, everybody.
You know Heather from the Facebooks on the Intertubes and from the hit podcast, Ardent Atheist. You can find links to our guest's website, join our Twitter and Facebook feeds, subscribe to our premium 90-minute full-length episodes, and our email at skepticallyyours.net.
If you'd like to take part in the live chat moderated by Joe Swam, go to the YouTube page called Ardent Atheist Podcast, which we also use for Skeptically Yours, and chat us up.
Go there now. Everybody's doing it.
About 10 to 15 people are doing it.
I think there are more people than that doing it. I mean, when you consider that there are nearly 7 billion people on the planet, fully one quarter of them are sexually viable and active. And since it's Sunday...
It's 9 a.m. Monday morning in Perth, Australia.
Exactly. Aussies are known for their morning sex.
An hour after they get to work?
That's why they call it Down Under?
You're claiming that Australian people have sex with each other at 9 a.m. in the workplace?
That's right. I'm saying that.
Prove it.
Stupid. Proof.
And you're not doing it tonight.
We only have one rule on our show.
Guests may plug anything they want, including the chai hole of Mike Huckabee.
And if your listener's ever been duped by anything that's been debunked on Snopes, welcome. Your ordeal is over. We're coming to you live from E&H Studios in Studio City, California. In the Studio City today, we have BJ Kramer and Jacob Jacks. You know these guys from the world of reason.
And showbiz.
Oh,
showbiz?
Yeah.
And showbiz. Hello.
I got a question.
Yeah?
I honestly do not know what a chai hole is.
Really?
I don't.
It's your
What's
face.
That drink that people get at various, like, you can get a chai at...
Chai tea.
Chai tea.
So yeah. There are some people who have a tea orifice?
Where do you put your tea, Mr. Kramer?
Yeah. Where do you put your tea?
Chai hole. With,
Where mouth. Do you put,
but I,
you
I don't
put it in the same
tea.
Place you put your pie. So what I'm saying is, we're no longer telling people to shut their fucking pie hole. We're telling them to shut their fucking chai hole.
This is California.
It's California.
That was where I got confused.
Yeah, you're an East Coaster.
I very much am. Yeah. I am a New Yorker. I live in Brooklyn.
Don't you have the uppity assholes that drink chai and hold their pinky out and talk about how important things are that aren't?
I want a chai tea right now.
Yeah?
Those people definitely do exist. However, I live in Williamsburg, land of the hipster.
I don't know.
And land of the Jew.
Land of the hipster.
Is Williamsburg a Jewish hipster place?
Yes.
Well, it's both, but not in exactly the same place. So there's a good part of Williamsburg that is Jew town.
Yeah.
And then there's the good part of Williamsburg that's the hipster town.
Jew
And they are at war with each other.
A lot of people would be offended by what BJ said if it weren't for the fact that he were a Jew.
Everyone knows that.
As listeners.
Were is a Jew. Past tense, yeah.
It's funny, if I say were, listen to the sentence. If it weren't for the fact that he were a Jew... I don't know. It should be was.
Yeah,
paging back to redundancy.
Right?
Yeah, it's interesting because...
You should have said that twice, Jacob.
That would also... Anyway,
a friend of mine insists that redundant is dundant. We don't need the re. I love that joke. BJ, you're in L.A.
I am.
Yay.
You've come out just to hang out, brought the boys, you're just...
He's come out.
Yeah. It's kind of silly. I've been at the same job for 16 years, and I work for a company that treats me really well, and I get a lot of vacation days.
That's so great.
And most years, I get towards the end of the year and say, like, holy crap, I can take vacation time. I probably should have planned this earlier.
Right.
But, you know, I took my kids out of school because I think any day they spend with me is a day they learn more than if they'd go to school.
Nicely put. Mm-hmm. You're not kidding either.
I'm really not.
Yeah.
I wish that wasn't the case.
Yeah.
But, you know, if I'm not working and I can focus on them, I'm quite certain that they will leave the day with a better education than had they been bored to tears at school.
Especially when we go to museums like the, what's the museum that we went to last
time? The Creationist Museum?
No.
Oh, we didn't go with the kids to there. Where did we go together?
Did you go to
the Guinness Book of Records.
Oh, that's a good
one. Oh, God. Yeah. Hardly. Yeah. That may have drained a few IQ points from my kids, but it was fun. I enjoyed it.
What was wrong with it?
I don't believe much of it.
Really?
My skeptical alarm bells go off at the Ripley's Museum a lot.
Oh, I love
this. There are pancakes bigger than this.
Nicely done, Jacob. So And Jacob, by the way,
hi.
What brings you to LA besides you just wanted to hang out with BJ?
I wanted to see you guys
is
do this podcast.
Is that not enough?
That's all it takes.
I'll be honest, I didn't know he was going to be here.
Emery just did a spit take.
A magic show directed by Neil Patrick Harris over at the Geffen Playhouse.
You guys both went to see it.
Yeah. We did.
I was warned by every magician that if I didn't go see it, I would be sorry. So
I've seen the impetus for it. I saw at Magic Castle when they performed incredible show. And I think the thing I saw was maybe 15 minutes, 20 minutes long. You saw a full, what?
70 minute show.
It's 70 minutes.
And yeah. Eric Wareheim was there. Do you know who Eric Wareheim
is? Yeah, Eric was actually in our audience when we saw
Eric
at the Magic Show.
Oh that great. That's wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah. He's tall.
Yeah, he is tall.
That's what I've heard.
He's really tall.
The show that I saw, now I understand that they've taken that 15 or 20 minute set and they've expanded it out and they just do it really slowly.
Yeah, it's the same three tricks.
Right.
Yeah, a lot more talking.
Really
No, but it's really nice. It's really really nice as a magician to go to a show and have every single trick fool you.
Yeah.
And that's rare when you start studying magic, and that is absolutely what happened last night.
To be clear to the audience, Jacob's a magician.
Yeah, I was about to clarify. Here, listen, first of all, I want to talk to you about something. You know, we were talking about what we're going to do on the show,
yeah.
And I didn't warn you, and I should have probably warned you, because it just fired in my synapses just now. There's something I really want to cover on Skeptically Yours.
Great.
How is it that I'm stunned to have learned that there are magicians who are not skeptics.
Yeah, I'm the exact same way.
Are you with me on this?
Yeah, because I started doing magic when I was 10, and I started thinking about religious ideas after that, and skeptic ideas, and
yep.
The magic stuff informed how I felt about that and made me a skeptic.
Right.
Oh, look, I can fake miracles, and I'm not that good at it.
And that's a good explanation of why it makes sense that if you become a magician, that you're going to become an honest skeptic, someone who's going to stand up and go, don't fall for this bullshit.
It's not the case at all.
It's not really.
Well, I mean, it's the case. There's about a third of us, I guess. I don't know what the exact number is.
Yeah, who knows? There's also
gospel magicians.
Dude.
Oh, no.
I can't believe this. When someone is doing, you know, magic tricks and they're building. I saw a guy do, he took a classic card trick and turned it into some sort of bullshit Jesus parable.
Yeah.
You can find it on YouTube, but don't. That's my advice to you.
Well, it's funny. In some ways, the sentiment I agree with, because I'm so in favor of people not just saying, here's a cool trick that you can't figure out, and saying, here's a performance where I talk about something I care about.
Yeah.
But you're caring about the wrong stuff.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, we think we're right. You know, we think that.
Well, they're wrong.
That's exactly right.
That's good science, right?
That's great science. But it shocked me when I discovered that there are indeed magicians who are either religious or
just not skeptically thinking,
yeah, not critical thinkers.
It's bizarre.
How can you do magic requires the ability to think critically.
It depends on what kind of trick you're doing.
I think you can buy the book and follow the instructions to some degree.
Yeah.
You know, some people don't get deep into magic theory about why we're fooled. And
I live in a bubble is what I'm saying, isn't it?
I think that there's a, in lots of areas, even outside of magic, we see the same kind of question. How could this person be a, cardiologist and be, a young earth creationist?
And believe homeopathy.
And that exists all the time, all over the place.
What's
people have all
people?
Kinds of wacky beliefs that they shouldn't be able to believe if they've gone through the study of some real legitimate science.
Yeah, an old friend of mine was a doctor. She was in the army, I want to say. And she helped me understand the whole placebo effect.
Hmm.
And the next thing you know, she's gone off with her family down to New Zealand, and now she's in that homeopathic psychosis. It's just nuts.
Ugh.
Yeah, I couldn't believe she ended up there.
Bleh.
Homeopathy is this weird thing that, for some reason, makes me so much crazier than some of the other stuff we deal with. I don't want to digress down this too far, but it is, I think, just more intellectually insulting than some of the other stuff that we as skeptics encounter. It almost seems like a practical joke played on its believers. It's so ridiculous.
It's so clearly not true.
So clearly not true.
It's like, swing this cat over your head and say a prayer three times and you'll be cured.
But do you know why it works?
Well,
placebo.
Homeopathy works?
It's not the reason people buy into it, I think. I have some theories on this.
I have one too.
You do?
Mm-hmm.
Number one, we're talking about something that is, and you're going to love where this goes, we're talking about something that is a highly emotionally charged aspect of life.
I knew mm-hmm. you were going there.
That's what this is all about.
Yeah.
The most effective way to dupe someone is to appeal to their emotional states. And when it comes to health, when it comes to recovering from insane, horrible, awful things
cancer.
Like cancer and you know, being unable to get hard, these things are very important to people, and therefore, thank you, Jacob.
Why is that funny?
I'm not laughing because it happened to me. I swear, I'm laughing because it's funny when it happens to other people.
If you can't maintain an erection, you're going to fall for some bullshit, is what I'm trying to say. But no, I mean, if you're suffering from cancer, if you're suffering from any kind of really debilitating and, quite frankly, life-threatening illness,
like gullibility,
that turns you gullible.
Yeah.
It makes you listen.
Yeah, grasping at straws.
One of the smartest guys I think that ever walked the earth.
Thank you.
Fell for it. Very Colbert-esque. Nice, nice. But Andy Kaufman, even his final stages of fighting against this
really
awful
sad.
Disease, went and fell for these stupid things. Of course, he knew as they were happening that he had been duped into them. You know what I mean? Like when they pretend to pull out poison from his gut.
Psychic surgery. Yeah,
I was really bummed by that because it turns out that he not only fell for a psychic surgeon, but at least according to the movie, he fell for a pretty mediocre one. I saw the move and I was like, you know, at least
what they were doing.
At least
in the
go
movie.
To somebody good.
You hang out with magicians. You're jaded.
I'm totally,
you
know, right? Totally spoiled.
Yeah. I used to walk dogs, and this one family of dogs that I walked, there was this older dog that was found on the street, and this woman took it in. And one of the regimens I had to go through with these animals was I had a laundry list of pills to give them and little drips of oils and things to put in their bowl. I mean, it was for each animal, it was a different thing, and it was all
made up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And
wow.
She just, the dog got better, but probably because it went to therapy and it went to an actual doctor.
And a lot of things we recover from.
Yeah.
Dogs too.
Yeah.
You know?
A little bit of love and attention, you know.
Or time.
Jake Johansson got the, what's it called? The copper bracelet, I think, that they sell you. Because his elbow was hurting. Now, when I turned 40, all of a sudden I started feeling the joints. You know what I mean? There are parts of my body.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
How old are you?
I'm not 40.
yes.
Now everyone knows what
for
age he is.
2 weeks.
Uh-huh. 2 weeks?
2 weeks.
Don't give it away.
Everybody, my birthday
BJ's
is
birthday
December 26th.
December 26th, one day after mine.
Who cares? Let me tell you where to mail the gifts.
Mail them to me.
Yeah, that's right.
I have a question for you. Are you tired of bacon yet?
Oh, that is the stupidest thing anyone's ever said. I love you, Heather, but really.
Heather, awesome. Heather, I have a question for you. Who the fuck do you think you are?
You are looking at the product of 2 years smoke-free but bacon-dense body.
So you sweat bacon?
I kind of do. It's...
That's
what
the name
we
of
had
our
this
album.
Morning. This morning we had whiskey bacon.
It was spectacular.
Yeah, it's a slightly spicy flavor. You
can
get it at the Waffle on
sweet.
Sunset and Vine.
I mean, we're going way digressed, but I got to point something out. Over the last year or so, especially, I've become more and more concerned with meat and meat production and animal welfare and things like that. Not enough to make a big difference to me, but enough to sort of make me feel a little guilty and bothered by it. And as a result, I've decided I'm going to take very, very small steps just so that I can actually commit to something. So I barely ever eat beef anymore. I'd like really cut that way, way down. And I thought like, oh, shit, if I keep going down this road at some point,
mm-hmm.
my beloved bacon is on the chopping block, so to
right.
speak. So I just decided I'm going to order it that bacon goes last.
Oh, okay.
Whatever I eliminate, you know, meat wise from my diet.
So you're genuinely trying to. Step by step,
I'm doing it very, very slowly
because
I know me and I know that I'm not a man of strong willpower.
I got to be honest with you. I am with you. First of all, I've naturally not been a big fan of the beefs. Mm. You know what I mean? I don't like steak. I never order tri-tip. I never.
I just lost two friends in like 3 minutes. I don't like either of you anymore at all.
No, I had a steak recently because I was at a steak restaurant with a bunch of old friends and everybody was all ordering it. I'm like, I mean, I'm not going to make an issue out of it. And it's that degree of cutting back where if there's a reason and I don't want to whatever, but I just never order it if there's no reason. And
yes,
I
yes.
end up having... Yeah.
Belushi quit cocaine in the same way.
I'm having, I'd say in a given month, in the last few months, I've had less than a quarter of what I used to have of beef, probably even less than that.
Well, listen, if you know BJ, that is affecting the beef industry significantly. Yeah. You want to realize it or not.
I wouldn't have mentioned it otherwise.
You can see the dent in the graph.
But... I'm
solving global warming this way.
I never liked. Listen, you still have a pretty heavy footprint. I never liked
punch you.
When I was.
Hey,
who were we claiming was acting like a teenager recently? I never liked beef when I was a kid. They made me eat that steak, and I hated it. And my grandmother didn't prepare it well. It was never tender, you know. And so I came to hate. The heavy meats, if you will. I fell for a while. I was a fish guy, and I like fish on occasion, and I love sushi. But chicken really is my meat of choice. If I were to, in a stair step way, in this tapering way that you're talking about, mm-hmm. give up meat altogether, I would absolutely put bacon. Not the last thing. The last thing is cock, but bacon would be right down there.
I think it might be okay for me to take a steak and just sort of put it in my mouth and lick it a little bit. And that's not eating.
Tell it slow.
So I'm just saying, bacon still lasts.
If the reason
Unless
that you're giving
you're
up
a
steak
very
is...
dangerous man.
If the reason that you're giving up steak is morality, I think licking the dead meat is the
It's probably not very good.
It's worse than not eating it.
Yeah.
So I should just stick to cock.
It's worse than eating it. Right. Yeah, yeah.
I just want to say, if you're going to do that, you should swallow the steak because it's the polite thing to do.
You're listening to Skeptically Yours on SkepticallyYours.net and available at the iTunes Store.
Good news, everyone.
We have a premium service. That's right. We do the show for 90 minutes, and you'll be able to listen to the live show and or download the first hour for free from iTunes, just as it's always been. The premium service will allow you to subscribe to the full 90-minute show. It's only $10 per year. That's all. If you want to support us, please go to SkepticallyYours.net/premium and subscribe. And now, back to Skeptically Yours, where thinking is free. We're talking with BJ Kramer and Jacob Jacks.
You can think all you want.
You're a meat eater, Jacob.
Oh, all the time.
Yeah. Have you ever, you're a skeptic, a critical thinker, you're a smart guy. I think I am too. Have you ever found yourself watching any of this footage where they literally torture these animals in their final hours?
Wasn't this last week's podcast?
Yeah.
It was on the show. It shook me a little. It made me stop and think.
I had a hard time listening to it because it was challenging my morality.
If you are, and that's the other thing. I mean, BJ, you're emotional about food. And I'm not joking either. You really are emotional about food.
I think everyone is to some
Aren't
extent.
We all?
Some extent. Yeah. I know people who
but
are.
But it's the bulk of my emotions.
Yeah, yeah.
Are about food.
So we don't think clearly, and we're not willing to really put our ideas on the chopping block, up on the pedestal, and go, are these wrong? Am I making a mistake here? I'm not making a bid for vegetarianism. There's a part of me that thinks that it's not as healthy as eating meats. You know what I mean? And the biggest problem is it's not readily available yet. The things available to us that are in the meat world are so fucking amazing, and I'm having trouble feeling like it makes enough sense for me to deprive myself.
Don't you think you should just go out and kill anything you're going to eat?
I'd rather pay extra to have somebody else do that, though. I don't like killing animals.
Well, you're killing them in sense anyway.
The test they did where they told people that they were shocking people when they got answers wrong, and they found out that the farther you remove them from it, the more comfortable they were with it.
Yeah, the more likely they were to be okay with it.
So I'm more okay with it because I'm not seeing it. Or
That was one of the...
I'm aware that's wrong, but...
That was one of the very well-known, highly immoral tests that was in the 50s.
It's horrible, but interesting.
Yeah, really amazing.
Yeah,
I think we learn a lot more when we discard our morals for science.
Mengele said that. That's a direct quote.
Mengele knows what he's talking about.
So you mentioned this idea, this concept of an emotional way of looking at things, and how it's kind of what is doing this with what I'm trying to do. I know that we are all just wired to use our emotions primarily. And in fact, I've been reading recently, I think Michael Shermer talks about it pretty extensively, that for the most part, when humans make decisions that are rational, or so it seems, they're really just rationalizing the decisions they've already made emotionally.
Right.
And it's really, really hard for us to train ourselves to actually do that purely, to really go with what makes the most sense, to be the most reasonable, even if it is counter to what you want emotionally.
Sucks.
I'm not sure if in this case for me it's that clear an example, because I have an emotional response to animal welfare, just like I have an emotional response to the joy of meat.
Right.
So it's they're both emotional states. I actually went to a slaughterhouse when I was 13 or 14 as part of a—
Do you hate yourself?
A school trip. My rabbi took us to a kosher slaughterhouse, and they were slaughtering sheep that day. I'm not going to go through all of the details about just how unbelievably vile the experience was, but one thing that makes one of the hundreds things that make an animal not kosher is a blemish where there's flesh that attaches the outside of the lungs to the inside of the rib cage.
Okay.
Those are supposed to be sort of independent, but sometimes there's a little bit of skin that sticks them together. So when they first cut the carcass open, the butcher reaches inside and feels around the outside of the lungs to make sure there's nothing there. And lo and behold, when I was there, they found one with this particular defect. So they, of course, asked for volunteers from the kids. Who wants to feel it? Yeah, I raised my hand.
Because you hate yourself.
Because I was 13, and when I was 13, I was like, that looks gross. Awesome.
Right.
And yeah, I had to roll my sleeve up to my shoulder and slide my arm inside a sheep carcass.
Beheaded at this point?
The head was, I believe, still attached. They slit the throat.
And they drain the blood out.
They hang it upside down,
right?
Cut the throat with like a massive razor blade. It's like a foot-long razor blade they use. And it's not— so there's no curve to it. It's a strange tool.
Right.
Like, and it was really horrendous. The weird thing is, I don't remember that having any impact on me at all.
As a kid. Yeah.
And the memories of it have come back 20-something years later.
Right.
And now it's bothering me. And I don't know. That's probably nothing particularly
more
weird
emotional
about that. Yeah, maybe I am. I'm a softie.
Do you hear the sheep? Why am I doing Hitler?
I'm doing Hannibal Lecter.
And Hitler.
You have the other guy voice, right?
That's— you can hear the crying of the sheep, can you not?
So I'm the one responsible for bringing up animals. So if you don't mind, I'd like to roll this back to— we were talking about something earlier, and there was a word I was trying to get in and never had a chance to. The idea that people, like magicians, can... believe really nutty stuff, like that, you know, you're not hated by everyone you know.
It's because they want to believe it.
Because they want to believe it. So, but they're trained to understand things. Like, how does that make any sense? And I think it's one of those questions where there's not really an answer, but there's a way of sort of explaining it. We compartmentalize, and our brains seem to be able to do that with remarkable efficiency.
Yeah, I think we're better when we compartmentalize. I think it's a survival technique.
Yeah. I mean, for instance, I imagine that if I got a job working for an animal rights organization, because that was just like a good job, and I believe it, and I'm for it, and I could do it, and I don't think I'd stop eating meat like right away.
Right.
And the obvious contradiction there would be like insane. But people can do that.
Yeah.
We all can do it. And
you know, I one reason why I eat meat is because I don't like a lot of other things.
I didn't mean to keep bringing that up. I was just an example.
I'm with you. Yeah.
There's my favorite certain vegetables that I just, you know, if you're vegetarian or vegan, these people eat all sorts of great things. They're grains and leaves and all sorts of weird things that you get out the dirt. And I don't like half of that stuff.
All kinds of terrible stuff.
I just don't like it. You know, there's lots of nuts I don't like.
She also can't eat soy.
I can't eat soy.
That's—
I can't
rough.
Eat dairy.
That makes
so.
It tough.
Well, meat is the best food. You made a good choice.
Thank you.
You know, our friend Zach says that I like meat with meat topping on it.
Ren and Stimpy had a meat episode where they made meat shakes.
Wow.
So let me ask you, Jacob. What arguments against you're just part of the problem. They are destroying these animals. They're suffering the way they treat them. What's your argument against that? How do you respond to it? I don't have one.
Neither do I.
Other than
I'm aware that...
And I think it feels more healthy in my head.
Yeah. Am I for animal welfare? Yes. I would like... Am I okay with animals being killed to eat? Yes. They should be killed as humanely as possible. Are they being killed that way? No. Am I willing to boycott by not eating fast food? No.
I want to say that you really could do your own podcast.
Thank you.
Did anybody else get it? He's answering his own question.
I thought you were telling me to leave.
No.
You could do your own podcast.
Now that I've gotten all self-righteous and talked about how I don't want to eat as much meat, I can actually defend his position, I think, pretty well.
Please do, because I can't.
I can't defend my position. I'd like to hear...
Everything. There's... Okay. Why don't I... save all of the money I make at work that I don't absolutely need to survive and give it to starving people in Africa?
Because there's a lot of meat you have to buy.
Well, I could fatten them up.
You can't do everything right? Is that your argument?
There is an unlimited amount of morality that, you know, we should be doing. And, you know, we could distribute it however we want to distribute it. There's certainly better, more efficient, more moral, more important things that can be done than others. And we have to make that call. What are we going to spend our time and effort working on? And first, there's a question of how much are we going to be doing? There are some people who never volunteer any time or give any money, and fuck them. But, you know, there are some people who do it huge amounts. Most of us do somewhere in the middle. We're trying to help out in some capacity. So you can do a certain amount of effort, whatever that effort comes from, either your money or your time or just a sacrifice of some kind. Like, I'm not going to enjoy meat because, you know, it hurts animals. But we all have a limit to how much we could do, and there's a cost associated with every one of these things, and it's not even the same calculation for each person. The difficulty of me giving up beef turns out to be relatively low, and I haven't even given it up completely. I'm just cut down. So that's kind of an easy thing to do with a certain amount of benefit, and it's a calculation we all have to make. And to say this awful thing is happening, you have to stop. Really?
Because there's lots of awful
people
things happening.
Are dying, and I'm not stopping that. And none of us can. We all have to pick some battles of what, you know, improvements we're going to make to the world.
That's my new excuse. So I try every day to be a better person, and I check something off the list, and meat's really far down on my list.
There you go. And you know what? Yeah. And I'm actually really philosophically okay with anybody who looks like that. I'm a little not okay with most of my relatives and former Orthodox Jewish friends who look at me funny and like, animals, who cares? Kill them. They're there to eat. Yeah. You know, and like, that bothers me a little bit. That's just, you should care a little. I mean, if the answer is, it tastes too good and it's too hard and the alternatives aren't there, and like, you know, okay, we should really try to make things better. As far as I'm concerned, you're golden morally.
So the vegetarian and the vegan movement, they're really fighting religion too, aren't they? Because religion does tell those folks that that's why God put those animals here.
That's what my religion did.
That's a tough fight. That's what Christianity does too, and the Muslim faith.
Well, evolution tells us we're the top of the food chain, and I think that's also a valid argument.
That's not an accurate sentence, is it?
Well, it's an is-ought fallacy.
Yeah.
We are... you know, it's not a very scientific term, but let's say top of the street, sure. But that doesn't necessarily give us any kind of rights just to get there. Look, I mean, there's a strong body of evidence.
Moral stance, you're right, yeah.
Well, in
if you were standing next to a bear, who would be at the top of the food chain?
I own guns.
Huge amounts of violence was part of our evolutionary history.
Yeah.
You know, there's pretty good evidence to say that you know, rape is, you know, something that is
evolved. I didn't think about that statement.
That's good for us. Yeah. And there's all kinds of horrible things that we evolved using that we should get rid of.
That's what I love about this show. You are on Skeptically Yours, and usually when someone, and I've done it, I've been in the seat you were just in, Jacob, where I said something and then
That's why it's warm.
The other three people in the room, the other three people in the room are like, "You just fucked up. Here's your ass."
Well, being a skeptic means enjoying being told you're wrong, right?
That's exactly right. I'm emotional about getting the facts. That's where I try to be emotional. And I want to be careful sometimes. When emotion is part of the equation, and we just said this a moment ago, I'm going to reiterate it. When emotion is part of the equation, then all of a sudden you become error prone. if you go in to buy a car, you will pay the most you can pay for that car if you are overly emotional about that purchase.
That's why women shouldn't buy cars on their period.
Or at all, really. Should they be driving? I mean, let's be honest.
A joke that I could never have said. Well, I could have and would have.
I'm just staring him down
Hitler
right now.
I'm like, really?
Yeah.
That crosses your line?
No. I'm just saying they get mad.
Luckily, most people ignored my comment.
What was this comment?
I didn't hear it.
Exactly.
I don't really want to repeat it.
Let's play it back. I'm gonna play it back. All right. We'll be back right after this. You're listening to Skeptically Yours on SkepticallyYours.net and available at the iTunes Store. Have you heard about our other hit podcast, Ardent Atheist? Well, you have now. It's good. Hilarious. Check it out if you don't believe me. www.ardentatheist.com. Go there now or later, whenever. I don't really care. Just go and stop bugging me. And now back to Skeptically Yours, where thinking is free. We're talking with BJ Kramer and Jacob Jacks. Thanks again for being here, guys.
Sure. And,
Jacob, you're a street performer.
That's true.
And
proud of it.
Right on the strip.
It's another Vegas name Boulevard. For hooker.
It's no, performer. Performer. Oh.
Yeah. Am I allowed to tell him to go to hell?
Yeah.
Sure. BJ, go to hell.
Yeah, sure. I'm not worried about that one.
Yeah, go to a place that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Jacob, how long have you been performing?
On the street or at all?
At all.
I started doing magic when I was 10 years old and got pretty serious about it when I was 12.
Yeah. He's gotten better.
Yeah, I really sucked good. Back then.
You didn't go see him on the street, did you?
I actually have never seen him perform because I'm a shitty friend.
You should go see him.
We're going next week.
Tells me he's going to see me every time he's in Vegas, and he never has. And I can only imagine that he hates me.
He does.
I just don't want to suffer that crushing disappointment.
Don't build it up in your mind. Imagine a terrible magic show. Mine's slightly better, and then you'll be happy.
My friend Eddie Gorodetsky, I was arguing with him, not arguing, discussing the invalue, is that a word, of the word interesting. Now, this is not an original idea. This comes from Teller. Teller is irritated by the word interesting because it doesn't communicate anything.
That's interesting. Tell me why.
Right? There you go. So it leaves you in the dark as to what the person is thinking or you know. I don't think it's worthless. I mean, it's a comma. It's a, what are you thinking? You know what I mean? It's a way of communicating an idea. The fact that there is something to communicate. So it's not worthless in my mind. But I told that to Eddie, and he goes, you know what I say when I go to a screening of somebody's crappy movie, right? Have you ever heard this? And I said, I don't know what this one is. And he goes, you've done it again.
Yeah. I got a couple more
wow.
for you.
Is that great?
So do you want to hear what Randy says?
Yeah, yeah.
He says, you were never better.
Oh, that's
and then the best one is by Michael Goudeau.
Yeah.
They say, what do you think of the show? He says, man, were you ever good? But he's asking, were you ever good?
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, so those are a couple more tags for you on that.
God, I love our friends.
Oh, good.
Yeah. That's really nice.
But you know, I'll tell you, you know, because we suffer this problem of a lot of performers in Vegas. We go to see a lot of shows. A lot of times it's people we know or friends of people we know. And so you have to talk to them afterwards. And if the show's bad, they're still relatively usually good people and nice people. You don't want to hurt their feelings.
Yeah.
So
unless
you're
Chris Angel.
Yeah, I would hurt his feelings with a hammer. No, so.
And then eat him.
A friend of ours who. I won't out because this is what he uses when he sees a bad performance and then he won't be able to use it anymore.
But. Yeah, I probably shouldn't have said it was Eddie.
What's Randy going to do? Hit me? Mm-hmm. No, but a friend of all of ours, he'll just go up and say thanks for the show. And that's a really polite thing to say. And that doesn't speak to the quality. That's and you nice. Are thankful for the show. And usually they say, oh, thank you for coming. And then that's a wonderful interaction and you can move on.
Right.
So that's what we do.
Well, what happens when they say, how was it? What'd you think?
Nicely done. Because most people do a nice show. Right?
Right.
Nicely done. Yeah.
The lighting was amazing.
What a show.
I don't know. I mean, I'm jaded. I'm a street performer, so when people don't like my show, they're not there at the end of it.
You know? I'm the opposite of all of these folks. I mean, if you invite me to come look at your show, and then you say, what did you think?
Let's be honest.
I'm going to say, you've just asked me what I think. Do you want to know what I think? Or do you want me to just be super polite? Because I can give you constructive criticism. Or I can only comment on the things that are really good. Which do you prefer? That's what I say. And I've had people say, just tell me what you liked.
Yeah.
That's funny.
This is why, because I'm friends with Emery. I will never go into show business.
Oh, really?
But here's a really important thing, and I don't think there's probably not, I don't know what the Venn diagram of people that listen to this show that are skeptics and also performers is, but you do a thing that's really important, which is that you ask people, or you wait till you're told that they would like your feedback before you provide it. Yeah. And there's so many performers who go, I'm a magician too, so let me tell you, I have a few notes for you about your show. And it's like, who are you?
I've made that mistake before.
I'm happy to hear feedback from most people.
With pen.
With pen?
Yeah.
I'm not a magician, but let me tell you how to do your job.
Yeah, not about his show, but after the show when he was greeting people.
I'm happy to hear feedback from most people, but the assuming that I want it irritates me.
You want to hear what I said?
This story is far more interesting. Go, Heather. Go.
What did you say?
Well, when he's out with in the audience signing autographs, he holds a black magic marker.
Mm-hmm.
And when he puts his hands around the people, he has this magic marker in his hand. And I said, I was wondering if you... I forget exactly the words I said, but I said, you know, the magic marker makes it look so impersonal. Would you want a picture with a guy with a magic marker in his hand? And he said... And he got really upset with me. He got really upset with me, and he didn't tell me about it until an email later. But
wow.
But I said it in person to him because I was like, why a magic marker? It seems so...
And it seems like the same thing. I don't think he's saying that's terrible advice. Maybe just that you provided it.
He says he
asked.
Thought about it a lot already. He's already thought. Mm. They think for a long time, and they just want to come get an autograph with a guy who does this magic show. They don't care if it's a magic marker.
Well, I think it's okay. I mean, I give constructive criticism to strippers. You know, I think it's fine. I'm like, little more. You really should. I know.
I don't want to hurt your feelings, but they don't actually care what you do for a living. They're just asking so that you'll buy a lap dance.
Once you've paid for a lap dance,
it doesn't matter what you say.
Wow, it
all
makes
sense
now.
You are their employer, and therefore it is extremely appropriate for you to dole out any advice that you see fit.
Well, so how is that different from someone
Saturday?
Well, you know,
how is that different from someone paying to see my show and then giving?
Funny
feedback?
You should say that. You know, Penn calls them all boss. Thanks, boss. Thanks, boss.
Yeah.
Heather doesn't pay to see Penn's show. Shut up.
Yeah. That's why she can tell him to ditch the marker.
Being a former stripper, I would beg to differ with your
former.
I knew you would.
Former stripper.
What did I say?
You said former.
You said former.
Former.
Well, it's 2:30. You know, so, you know.
Pour some drinks.
I think BJ is
there's a dentist joke in there
hinting
somewhere.
Hinting at something. Yeah, there is. It's 7 past Asian dentist time.
2:30. Oh, that's so clever.
Do you know that I will only book a dental appointment at 2:30 if possible, unless it's an emergency, of course. And they think I'm nuts at the dentist office.
You have problems.
Yes.
It's really.
Thank
but
you,
I love
Jacob.
You. I love your problems.
Apparently, he's got problems with his teeth because he can't get a fucking dental appointment.
Yeah. I have. They always fit me in, but I will go a few days away. You know, like we have next Thursday open. Is 2:30 available? No. Okay, what about Wednesday? What about Friday? You know, and finally they find a day where 2:30 is open and 2:30. You would think working in a dental place, you would even know that joke and you would appreciate it.
This is why
you're the 2:30 guy.
This is why Emery will never die because he will never grow up.
This is why you and I are friends, because comedy is more important than your health to you. And I'm the same way. You know, I'll get punched in the face if it's going to be a good joke.
Really?
Not today.
Oh, damn it.
You have any idea how funny a broken condom is? I'm just, you know, it's comedy gold.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, go for it.
I just realized that you're wearing a peace symbol on a tie-dye shirt made up of the words kill, 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 kill.
Yes, this, I bought this. I bought this at the American Atheists Conference. There was a guy who had a whole suite of really cool custom t-shirts.
Funny shirts.
A lot of them had kill in. I wish I remembered his name, but I don't. But I love the shirt. And
do you know what BJ's Jewish name is?
I do.
Jeffrey Dahmer.
I did not realize
you were going there.
That's really funny. Everything is a setup on this show.
Because
right?
I eat a lot of meat.
Yes, you do.
Oh, because he actually ate penises.
Yeah,
he did.
Yeah. My joke was better than I thought.
Right? Wouldn't you do a hot dog?
Now?
No, I mean Jeffrey Dahmer. I can't get out of my mind the image of him having a hot dog.
I do nothing but get that image why out
did
of my
that
mind.
Image, why did that image get into your mind?
I spent a great deal of time removing that
when
image.
When I read about Dahmer and I found out that he ate flesh.
Have you seen...
And he's clearly bisexual, if not gay.
Have you seen the Billy the Mime, Jeffrey Dahmer bit?
I haven't seen that bit from Billy the Mime.
But nothing's funnier than describing a mime act on a podcast.
If wait, you don't wait, know Billy the Mime
is, let me do it.
I do. Right?
Let me set the stage. All I'm going to say to the audience out there, Billy the Mime.
That's right. He's brilliant. If you don't know who Billy is, he was in The Aristocrats. He was the one that...
he was the mime.
The mime. And by the way, I want to point something out that I think is awesome. Billy the Mime was wearing a mic pack.
Was he really?
Yes, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Maybe he thought he'd get like...
that.
Maybe he thought he'd get like Marceau's line in Silent Movie. Do you know about that?
Yeah.
This is digressing, but do you want some inside magic trivia?
Always.
Okay. Come on.
The only trick... what is the only trick that Penn and Teller do where Teller is wearing a mic?
Oh...
I know.
I know.
Well, let me say it so I can seem cool.
Okay.
All right.
I know.
The needles. Because he does a lot of regurgitating the needles, and the noises of him coughing it up is very important.
That's not true.
It's not true?
It's not the only one.
Oh,
it's the only one we're going to talk about on this podcast.
Yeah, there are some you
publicly.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I didn't say them. I'm just saying that that's not the only one.
I'm not going to correct you, but you are wrong.
There's a table full of,
thanks for that.
Full of cool insiders here.
Yeah. Teller, and did everybody here see Play Dead?
No.
Four times.
You saw it live.
Four times in New York.
You got to see the taping. Went
every
really
lucky
well.
Lady I dated went every. To see Play Dead.
I love that sentence. Every lucky lady I dated.
The unlucky ones. That
there
was
were
different.
Some unlucky ones. Okay, so none of the rape victims saw
Jeffrey Dahmer.
Yeah.
Right?
Do you guys know who Ed Gein is? Have you heard of him?
Oh, yeah. Ed Gein is one of my favorite... serial killing stories. He was in Plainville, Illinois, I want to say, and he was this quiet to himself loner handyman guy, older guy, and he everyone kind of thought of him as not, you know, he wasn't like a full on like wadahead, right? But everyone kind of thought of him as special or slow, you know? And one day all hell broke loose when he walked into the local hardware store, asked to see the rifle on the wall, took it, loaded it, shot the proprietor, the woman, put her in, I think, her own truck, drove away with her, and then he had had her hanging by her ankles in his barn and had gutted her like a deer.
Sexy.
But the coolest... I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I don't want to ruin your story.
No, I'm not... It's not my story. You brought it up. I'm telling you what I know.
The important thing about him is that he used to wear the skin of people.
You know, I'm going to tell you something about
this. He used to put women's breasts on and stuff. So I've heard.
We don't
Who
know...
Who doesn't?
Me. Let's make that very clear on Skeptical Yours. I don't wear women's parts.
I thought those were your tits, BJ.
The image of this woman hanging upside down in the bar getting gutted, it reminds me of things. So I'm never going to eat woman again.
You know, it's still within my morality. So what were you going to say?
What we know is he was, for the most part, he was digging up corpses. Okay. And he was doing awful things to corpses. I could stand corrected things on this, by the way, but I believe that films have turned him into the guy that danced around in the moonlight.
Psycho is based on him.
Yeah. I'm not sure there was proof that he actually wore their parts. In fact, I'm not even sure there's proof he ate them, but there's an awful, awful... There's a lot of misinformation around the Ed Gein story, and here's one of the reasons. He always would give venison during the deer hunting season to the locals, the friends, the people, the neighbors.
They liked him?
He would give them venison.
Oh.
And then, this is where it gets
awful. I see where this is going.
Then, when being interviewed after being caught and he admitted to what he was and was doing, they said, so you're a hunter. And he says, no, I've never hunted.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God. So of a sudden you had, like, when that news came out, people in Illinois, all of his neighbors ended up at a hospital.
Projectile vomiting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that's really amazing. I mean, if you've eaten the air quotes venison last year, running off to the hospital.
Not going to do a damn thing.
Later on, yeah. And why are you getting... I mean, that really tells us a lot about the power of the mind.
Yeah.
What emotions can do. Bringing us back to the point we had earlier.
Wait, but I got
to
do my Ed Gein joke.
Go ahead.
It's just, it's a groaner, but...
oh, I see.
Have you ever
all of that was to do a joke?
Yeah.
God. Well, now you know who Ed Gein is, listeners. We're going to hear a joke about Ed Gein, serial killer from the 40s.
Have you ever had an Ed Gein beer?
No.
No, I haven't.
Lots of body and no head. That's all. That's all I wanted to do. That's all I need to do on this podcast. I can leave now. All right. Yeah, so emotion plays a great deal into...
Can we talk about puppies or something?
I would eat a puppy.
You're listening to Skeptically Yours on skepticallyyours.net and available at the iTunes store. And now a special announcement.
This is a big super shout out to the listeners. Tim753100, Wendy Hughes, BJ Kramer, Danielle Lucas, Kyle Delaney, Loving Learning 64. Hi, Mom.
Hi, Mom.
Team Mandy, The Res Group, Emmanuel Plesh, Todd Anal 000.
Hi.
Joe Swam and Cameron Winters.
Oh my God, Tim753100 was my buddy in high school.
Really? These were the screen names of the people chatting in the Skeptic Tank last week. Thanks for being there, everybody. Especially you, Todd.
Yeah, you too. And now, back to Skeptically Yours, where thinking is free. We're talking with BJ Kramer and Jacob Jacks. I believe we were just talking about serial killer Ed Gein.
That's all I have to offer.
That's
him.
All you have? There are there were hundreds of jokes written about Ed Gein, and yep. I don't remember a goddamn one.
That one supposedly was told in that town by
the
townspeople to each other, yeah.
Really?
To lighten the mood, I guess.
Which is, I love that. I love when humor is used.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, oh, man, I'll tell you what, man.
You made a movie about it.
I did make a movie about humor.
What was it called?
The Aristocrats.
Available nowhere.
Available, not true. You can get it on Amazon.
Amazon.com, folks, The Aristocrats.
Cameron was asking on that. I had autographed one for Jacob yesterday and gave it to him last night. And Cameron was like, I thought that they, what happened?
He's remembering what you inscribed.
I don't remember. What did I write?
We'll talk about it later.
Does anybody remember?
Wait, before I tell you, is there a restriction on content?
No, I mean, we try and keep things a little bit lighter here than we do on the art.
Well, then you shouldn't have written that on my DVD.
I guess I should not have written that
it
on
basically here. Noted that I had to provide favors to you to get the signature. That's
what
all.
I wrote was, Jax blew me for this autograph. That's all I wrote.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I autographed.
And that's why I was laughing. I think we can go back to what we were doing.
It's not offensive because it actually happened.
So did Ed Gein, and I'm still offended.
If you were lying about me, I'd be mad, but you know, whatever.
You just outed yourself.
Who?
Uh-huh.
Jacob loves women.
What did Cameron say? Cameron, oh, he was asking about the DVD. Because Think Film, the distributor for art,
The Aristocrats.
The Aristocrats.
You snapped wrong.
I know.
It's this way.
It's like now the snapping a crat, right? That's what Penn calls it.
That's exactly right. Snap a crat. So thank you, Drew, by the way. Drew.
Still available, Amazon.com.
You can get them on Amazon.com. You can find them. The DVDs are out there and available. I do not know where they're coming from. I don't know. I don't.
China. They right? come from China.
Well, I ordered some because we're having a screening this coming Wednesday right after The Ardent Atheist. Our guest will be
tune
for
in.
That show, BJ
Kramer.
That's right.
He's still in town, so BJ's going to do Ardent Atheist for us.
And Shelley will too.
Shelley Siegel will be on that show. And I think we're going to have Shelley's dad over here.
Awesome.
Who is a rabbi, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe he's the president of a synagogue.
President of a synagogue.
I don't think he's ordained as a rabbi. But
who's his vice president?
I don't know.
Joe Biden?
Who's his running?
Gore.
Because he's the actual vice president.
And we're going to sing a song on the show.
Are you going to sing?
We're going to sing.
You and Shelley?
Yeah, me and Shelley.
One of her songs?
One of her songs.
The lovely and talented Heather Henderson.
Maybe dad will play the violin.
Yeah, maybe.
I'm going to beatbox.
I will play the skin flute.
No, you're not.
You're going to play the bonophone?
Skin flute and bonophone. Nice. So, I don't know what... you can find The Aristocrats. I ordered about 15 of them from Amazon. And because I want to give them to the first 10 people who come to the screening on Wednesday. Because after we do the Ardent Atheist show, we're going to screen the Aristocrats here on my new big old stupid 46-inch TV.
Guys, if you can find the location, there's 1,000 people out there.
Yeah, right.
Come on.
Yeah, we've got a full house now. It's all filled up. If you really want to be here for that, drop me an email and we'll see. But it's going to be a crazy tight room. But the DVD looks exactly the same. The packaging is slightly different. In other words, the wrapping, the blister pack, seems to be different. So I'm not sure if I'm actually buying legal copies of my own movie.
They look really good.
They look really good. They're not like.
You think they're bootleg?
Did you watch it? They might have actually done the jokes worse.
I did. I did not yet watch it. Although
the Aristocats.
I'm glad you said that because I'm gonna show the DVD sent to me by Penn when the thing.
Okay.
Yeah. So we don't make a mistake there. But I'm gonna have to look at that. Yeah.
I can't wait to see it. I've never seen it.
Heather hasn't seen it. Amanda has not seen my movie. BJ, you've seen it.
I have seen it.
You saw the live play, right?
Four times. Seen with the actual lady.
I've seen the movie more than. The movie more than you.
No, you haven't.
Okay.
I cut the movie.
I know.
Okay.
But I'm making a poetic statement about how much I like it.
So you have seen it a lot.
Yeah.
Did you ever see it in a movie theater?
No.
You only saw it at home?
Yep. I certainly didn't download it illegally.
There's a camera right there.
Hi.
That's why he denied it.
I have a DVD of it. I have a legal copy that you gave to me.
You do. You do now. Rendering all of your illegal activity completely valid.
I'm just saying, I love the film. Can I nerd out about it?
Sure.
Johnny Carson loved the idea?
Yeah.
Did you ever get to chat with him, or what was that like?
I never met Johnny Carson.
Okay, but how did you come to find
that? I did not know that.
Prevenz knew Carson, and he and Carson exchanged emails. He had talked about the possibility of Carson talking about it, you know, pontificating, shooting Carson. He was very elderly. He was truly retired. He really did retire. But he was toying with whether or not he wanted to put his two cents in. In the end, he just wasn't up for it health-wise. So we didn't shoot Carson.
But did he? He didn't get to see it, right? That's the sad part.
Yeah, no, he never saw the finished product.
I've really brought the podcast down.
You loser.
Thanks, dude. Do you know Paul Prevenza's Buddy Hackett Tonight Show Aristocrat story?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
My favorite connection to this story, Buddy Hackett was always busting up. I mean, the guy was one of those always on kind of guys. So the first time I ever heard this story, it was before Prevenza told it to me. And it was told to me this way. It was told by an old roommate. And he said he was watching, I think, Carson. And Buddy Hackett was the guest. And Buddy Hackett had done his shtick and a couple of... He does street jokes a lot. So he told a lot of jokes and interacted with Carson. And then they cut to commercial. When they came back, the table had been knocked over. Everything was a fucking mess on the set, and everybody was howling,
crying,
when came
laughing.
Back.
Yeah,
yeah, just absolutely. It seemed like the stage was in hysterics, and the gallery was losing their minds. Carson was trying to gain composure so he could continue the show. They're back from commercial, and they haven't recovered from something. And when my friend told me that, I was like, "Well, what happened?" He goes, "I don't know." So he told me that story and was trying to figure out what was going on. Then years later, I'm sitting here in this living room cutting with Prevenz when he told me the Buddy Hackett story. The other half of that story is they cut to commercial and Buddy Hackett jumps up and goes, "You guys want to hear a dirty joke?" And the audience off camera, they're not rolling live. The commercials are running, so they'll be back in 2.2. And so he starts telling the joke. The Aristocrats joke, which, if you don't know the joke, is just filthy when told, especially by Buddy Hackett.
Sure, yeah.
And offensive on every possible level if you're a Christian. And the audience is just losing it as he does his version of the joke. And just as they're like, all right, we're coming back from commercial in 5, 4. And the agent said, what's the name of the act? 3, 2, The Aristocrats. And he sets down after having just knocked the whole set apart. Yeah. And he sets down in his chair and they're and the, everybody's.
It's a brilliant
idea. So that's
idea.
The other half of it.
But there's one tiny part that isn't as good as everything you just said.
So. What am I missing?
Just that. Part of Provenza's story is that he had the same experience as your friend as a kid, wondering, why was everyone laughing? And when he finally got to do his spot on The Tonight Show, he was standing backstage waiting to go on, and there's a guy whose job it is to pull the curtain aside so you can walk out. And he said, how long have you worked here? And the guy said, 30 years, as, you know, as long as Tonight Show's been. Right. So were you here the night Buddy Hackett was on and everyone was laughing? Yeah. Do you remember why were they laughing? And he said, he told the Aristocrats joke. That's how he found out about it.
That's great.
Asking
that's
that guy who had never missed a show. And
I didn't know that aspect of it. Cool.
That's pretty cool.
I don't know Provenza. I'm a fanboy. I heard him say that once.
Yeah, I know. If I knew Provenza less than you, I would have known that aspect of it probably. But no, he and I spent years in a room making a movie.
He's a
neat
person.
It's a good movie.
It's
I
a good movie,
it.
Right?
I bought a legal copy because I'm trying to repudiate my Jewish past.
Wait a minute. What are you talking about? Jews are moral.
Yeah, but cheap is what he's saying.
Yeah. You could have given me one. Penn might have given me one if I asked for it, but I was. No.
Like you're going to buy my song.
I'm totally gonna do that.
Yeah,
look at his eyes. I can't wait for Christmas to be over on cdbaby.com.
Go to cdbaby.com.
It's really good.
And download I Can't Wait for Christmas to be Over, or you can go to cdbaby.com/Heather Henderson 1, and the one is a numerical one.
It's a numerical one.
It's a song by Heather.
Do you have stuff you want to get to, or can I tell another story that's somebody else's?
My guests are the show.
Okay. Another story that somebody else's. You like
but
Robert?
I did want to get to this.
Okay. No,
go ahead. Do it.
You like Robert Schimmel?
I love Schimmel.
Okay. So this goes along with what you were saying about not asking your friends for something that you know you can get for free from them. He was on.
I wasn't including you.
Schimmel is
by the way.
No longer alive.
And you weren't including sex. Yeah, Schimmel's tragically died. But he was a big fan of Carlin and knew George Carlin a little bit. He was doing a radio show, you know, when you do stand up in random places in the country. You have to do morning radio.
You do.
To promote yourself, and it's awful. But he was talking about Carlin's book, When Will Jesus Bring the Pork Chops?
Yeah.
And how wonderful it was. And Carlin somehow heard the interview and called him up angrily and said, are you selling my book? What are you doing? And he said, no, I just liked it and wanted to talk about it. And he said, why did you go out and buy my book? I would have sent you a copy.
Yeah.
And he said, I'm not going to call you to ask you for a free book. And that was the end of the conversation. And he said, 3 hours later, there's a knock at his door, and it's UPS. With a package, and he opens it. It's another copy of the same book. He opens it up. Inside, it's inscribed, to Schimmel, go fuck yourself, George Carlin. Isn't that great?
So great, yeah. Carlin was one of the best human beings on the planet.
That's what I've heard. I'm so sad I never met him.
I was working way up in Seattle. I was working for a club that was run by, in the industry, we all knew Joe Torres to be just a worthless POS. He was just one of your classic shitty club owners. And I had never encountered this before, but the Northwest portion of our country really does suffer from the political correctness backlash problem. In other words, they're so politically correct as to...
How politically correct are they?
That's not what we're
saying. Shit.
It sounded like a
almost
setup.
Didn't say
in
it.
Her defense, it sounded like a setup. I'm just saying.
Okay. All I'm saying is, that's not the joke. All I'm saying is, they're so politically correct.
How politically correct are they?
Shut the fuck up.
The line is, who's there? All I'm saying is, in the Northwest, they're so politically correct.
They could
who's
do
there?
A blank.
Sorry.
It's a really liberal part of the country, and I've really come to understand just how problematic the PC issue can be, because it the only place that you can end up if you're really going to be uber PC, uber politically correct, is silencing people's speech. That's the only place that goes, and it doesn't make any sense. When you really analyze it. Anyway, now I didn't mean to
Carlin.
Get into a political thing. I'm up there. I'm doing my gig that I have been doing this bit for years. And I tailored this bit so that it worked. And in fact, I think I had Yeah, I think I had done this on local television in Kansas City, if I'm not mistaken. They may have beeped the Igger word. But I was doing...
Well, we have to continue your story later.
Oh, well, that's a shame. Are we really out of time already?
Yep.
Can we tell dead baby jokes in the last half hour?
Let's tell some dead baby jokes in the last half hour. That's it for the free version of episode 18, another show that went off without a hitch.
We miss you, Hitch.
We will be making the full 90 minutes available to our premium subscribers later tonight. If you'd like to hear the full 90-minute show, please go to skepticallyyours.net/premium and subscribe. I want to thank our guests, BJ Kramer and Jacob Jacks. I also want to thank my co-host, Heather Henderson.
That's me.
Yeah. Tune in next week when our guest will be...
slightly less Jewy.
And we'll be talking about...
What am I, a know-it-all?
Of course you aren't.
Our theme music, courtesy of the sound editor of the Aristocrats, Eric Wilson, and special thanks to our Skeptic Tank moderator, Joseph Shoots from the Hip Swam, and our digital publicist and web guru, Cameron Shoots from the Lip Winters.
You've been listening to Skeptically Yours on SkepticallyYours.net. I'm your host, Emery.
And I'm Heather Henderson.
And we are Skeptically Yours. Skeptically Yours is a product of an ever-expanding universe. So, dead baby jokes?
Yeah,
let's do that.
I was just trying to get something to come back for something, you know?
Yeah, we're coming back with dead baby jokes.
I got a few loaded up.